What's up? Welcome to episode 327 of the PS4 Blackcast. I'm JCM. With us this week is Isley.
Rudely interrupting as you start, because I didn't know you were starting at that exact moment.
And Messiah. Weird way to introduce yourself there, Isley.
Yep.
That's really kind of odd. I don't know what to do anymore. I feel like we've got to just cancel the day.
Start over.
No.
Totally okay. But just cancel the day.
No. Here we are. We have some new releases this week. We have Wolfenstein Youngblood, which is came out on Friday, of course. Came out daily on PC, so I haven't had a chance to play it. I have it downloaded, but I haven't touched it. Also, there was, what is it? Oh, I'm going to totally blank on the name. The Three Houses. Fire Emblem, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yes, that came out as well. That's on all platforms, right? Not just Nintendo.
I don't know. I would assume so.
I think so.
They all on all platforms.
But, well, because all the news I see around it tends to be on the Switch. People are like, oh, I can't wait to play that on my Switch. Or the voice actor kerfluffle, like that's only Nintendo doing the change. So that's why I
know that, huh?
I was like, it seems like it's only the Switch, but could have swore it's on everything.
Well, it's out.
Yes. But yeah, and we also have some news. We got a new Death Stranding trailer, which was shown at SDCC during the Kojima panel. They posted up on YouTube. It's basically just a short cutscene that's like direct from the game, which I like because it, you know, you watch the trailers and it's got the backing music and there's like a tone and you're kind of dropped in. You're not sure where you are in any scene. It's just like, oh, this looks awesome. But this was like, it's just a conversation between the Hartman and Norman Reedus' character. And it which really does a lot of like world building, especially with the guy. I don't know if you watched the trailer. I'm sure, Zai, you haven't because you've kind of been ignoring all the trailers, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so basically Hartman, every 21 minutes, he dies. And he spends 3 minutes, is it 3 minutes? Let's see here. I want to say it's 3 minutes. I they didn't even have it in this article I pulled up to kind of give me a breakdown, but he dies. And then for 3 minutes, he is on the other side looking for his wife and kid. And then he has this defib machine. That's that backpack looking satchel thing he's wearing, and it brings him back to life. And then he comes back and he, you know, it's like this weird Inception thing where being alive is kind of this interim period where he's just waiting to go back to look for his family. So I'm like, what is going on here? This crazy character that just dies every 21 minutes. He consumes media in 21 minute chunks. It's a like I said, I like the cutscene because it's very much direct from the game. It's in the tone of the game, so there's no music. It's just a conversation of this one character talking to another. I was like, I liked seeing that. I was like, oh, this is really cool. It kind of reminds me of the Troy Baker introduction trailer from TGS a few years ago where there's no music. It's just obviously a straight-up cutscene right before a boss fight. And but yeah, it's pretty interesting. I'm curious to see what happens with this character and then how much that ties into the overall story of Death Stranding, visiting the other side. Because he talks about being on a beach. And there's that scene from the very first trailer where Norman Reedus, you know, walks up and he's on the beach and all the animals are, you know, the mass stranding happened on the beach and there's all the floating figures off in the distance and it says, you know, Death Stranding. So you've seen that imagery before. So it's interesting to if the afterlife is just like this beach and then you're wandering this. Are you still on Earth? Like, where is he when he goes, when he dies? Like, I'm really curious what happens there. But yeah, so there's a new trailer for that. We also got the Doom trilogy released on all consoles. So this is Doom, Doom 2, and Doom 3. It just kind of surprise dropped yesterday. The QuakeCon is going on, so it was during their keynote. It had quickly leaked on Nintendo's eShop, I think in Europe, prior to the announcement, and then it popped back up. But yeah, so if you want to play all those, they're available now. Let's see. They range from $4.99 to $9.99. I'm assuming the $9.99 is the Doom 3, which I did download Doom 3 BFG edition on PS3 when that came out, but I never finished it. Remember, like, because I only played Doom once. I played it way back in, fuck, what was it, 2003, 2004? It was like right before Half-Life 2, I think. And I just remember on my laptop at the time, like, I could run the game fine, but then once I got to hell, it just, like, 12 frames. And I'm like, man, like, I still went through it, but it was just unplayable, but I wanted to finish it. So I might look into just replaying that, especially since Doom 3 is way more, like, horror scary. But and then we also got EA Access came to PS4 this week. It is $5 per month for a subscription, or you can pay $30 for a year-long subscription. I know some of the games that are offered, obviously Battlefield 5, Star Wars Battlefront 2, Titanfall 2, and more. And then, of course, they have a bunch of stuff, whatever they lease from the EA titles going forward. I'm not sure how popular this program is, or at least it was on Xbox when it launched there, or how big it is on PC, but...
It was popular for a bit, but I haven't seen any recent numbers, and I question how popular it is now, given how much backlash EA has gotten over pretty much everything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's not too much, but it's like you'd have to want those games. Like you'd have to want to play all the EA titles, and it's like it's a huge chunk of sports and a bunch of other things in between, a lot of first-person shooters. So it's like it. I guess maybe if like you knew there was this like, oh, Q4, they got all these, you know, new games coming out that I'm gonna want to play, then maybe subscribe for a month or two, and then it's you're good to go. Like, I don't know what the restrictions are. Like, oh, if you do the, you know, can you only have a certain amount of games active at one time to play? Like, because if it's like, let's say hypothetically this year, it's like, okay, you got the Star Wars game, and then let's say they had a new Battlefront or Battlefield. There won't be, because Battlefield 5 just came out last year. But if there was, and then, you know, something else, some other game. So it's like, oh, they all come out in the same two-month window. I'll subscribe to this for 2 months, play all three games, and then be done. So I just played three games for $10, you know what I mean? Like, got a taste of them, so at least the multiplayer games. But, like, the single-player ones.
I think it's made for the people that really just want to play every iteration of the sports games. Yes. Like, they just really want every single year's version.
Yeah, I mean, if you were, like, if they came out with a Battlefield every year, which they don't, they do Battlefield and then Battlefront, they kind of zigzag back and forth. But if I play Battlefront, let's say, I could see being like, all right, well, obviously, if I do this for $30, I'm getting the one game that I'm looking forward to each year because I like that franchise, essentially for 50% off, plus access to all the other stuff that they release. So it's like, okay, in that instance, it would be a great deal. But the problem is I only play the Battlefield games and I don't play the off-year ones. So I guess then if I did subscribe for a year, it's essentially I'm paying the price of the game for a two-year subscription to the service where I have access to all this other stuff. So it's like it potentially could, like, you know, go really well. Like, there's someone was bringing up the, I think, Xbox Game Pass or some subscription service. Maybe I think it was back when they were talking about the model for Stadia and how it relates more towards PlayStation Plus and Xbox. And there was someone who had wrote into a podcast saying how it's kind of recontextualizing the prospective deal you can get with it. Like, it's, you know, if it's something's $10 a month or it's, you know, X amount of dollars a year, if you can only afford one or two games a year anyways, it's like these subscription services suddenly become a huge value for those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But then it comes down to, of course, like in the case of Stadia, at least, okay, yeah, they have a much wider range, whereas if it's just EA or just Ubisoft or, you know, just this other publisher, like, then the value comes down to, do you care about the games in the portfolio from that publisher? But yeah, if you like them all, then it's like, yeah, it's a great deal. I could totally see doing that. But so which brings it back around. I'm curious how active these EA Access is on PC. Especially since I know a lot of PC players don't like the Origin launcher. But we'll see. It's there. At least it's more options. But yeah, and then we also got a announcement for Two Point Hospital, which will be coming to PS4, Switch, and Xbox One. It's supposed to come out in... I hate it when they don't... Just this later 2019. I hate it when they don't put the date at the top of an article. It's like pointless. Just put it at the top. And then tell me about the game. But Two Point Hospital was this game that came out on PC. I had watched people play it. It came out last year. And it looked really funny. You're just building a hospital, you know, dealing with problems. Sometimes there's ghosts. Like, it's really just a kind of cartoony game by Two Point Studios. But it looked like a lot of fun. I watched people like Day 9 play it. And who knows? Sure, it'll be like a $40, $30 game when it comes out on PS4. But it looks like a lot of fun. So there is that. And then aside from that, a lot of the other stuff was just fluff or trailers for games that I don't know anything about those games. So whenever I look up like, oh, there's a new trailer for some anime, like a Square Enix Oninaki gets new trailer and demo for PS4 and Switch, I'm like, I don't know what this is.
I'm so excited for Oninaki, though.
I've never heard of it before, and I feel like I should know what it is.
Oh my god.
Well, tell us what it is. Is it a long-running franchise?
No, it's made by Tokyo RPG Factory. They made I Am Setsuna and Lost Sphere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an RPG. It's like an action RPG, kind of. And the whole premise is, like, the world is, like, totally okay with death because they believe in reincarnation.
Oh, right.
But, so you, in order for you to be reincarnated, your, like, living family members can't mourn you, because if you have any regrets or, like, unfinished business in the world, you can't move on. And then you end up becoming, like, a demon or whatever. So you play as this person called a watcher, and your job is to, like, go between the living world and, I can't remember what it's called, the void world or whatever, where the dead kind of reside. And you have to go around and find people that are, they're called lost, like lost souls, and help them, like, come to terms with the fact that they're dead and finish their unfinished business so they can move on and be reincarnated.
Yeah, that's right. I was listening to, I think it was Game Informer. They were talking about it. And I remember I was like, I had no idea what the hell they were talking about when they were first going over. I was like, what is this game? Like, I missed the beginning. That's why when you started describing it, I was like, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, it sounded really strange. But I'm curious how it'll go, because I know that the other two games they made were, like, you know, they're good. Like, they reviewed, you know, 7, 7.5, stuff like that across the board. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how this one will
The second one was questionable, but the first one was really good.
I didn't play I Am Setsuna, but I played Lost Sphere, and I really enjoyed it. The only problem I had with it was there were points in the story where the difficulty, like, really spiked for no apparent reason, so you'd sometimes kind of get stuck and had to do a little bit of grinding and just, like, major gear upgrading and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. Other than that, I really liked it.
Should play I Am Setsuna. I enjoyed that game far more.
I want to play it, but I almost got that one instead of Lost Sphere because it was the first game I got for my Switch, but I was kind of in the mood for something just like RPG and kind of lighthearted, and I heard I Am Setsuna is kind of a downer. So
super downer.
Yeah, so I'll get it eventually, but from what I played of the Oninaki demo, it's really good, and I think Tokyo RPG Factory is becoming one of my favorite little studios.
Yeah, they seem to turn out stuff pretty quick, and, like, it's with the I Am Setsuna, a lot of people said, like, they like what they did. Again, it was just, it'd be, like, high sevens, like, just good across the board. Just, you know, not great, but just, it's, like, there. It's, like, all right, well, it's still quality. If you're putting out consistent quality, it's, like, then I feel.
The biggest problem people had with I Am Setsuna, which I think is a silly issue, is a lot of the game had similar settings. They expected the game to go through, like, tons of different areas, but it's kind of a bit of a downer, depressing game. So the setting that they chose makes sense for it, and it mm-hmm. fits, It's just people for some reason had this impression it was going to be more Final Fantasy IX, see a ton of different parts of the world, and instead it's a much more self-contained story.
Yeah, I heard a lot of the palette for the game is pretty similar throughout, which they kind of addressed in Lost Sphere because there's kind of more variety in the areas. But for, I mean, if that's kind of the theme of your game, it makes sense.
Yeah, the palette, it's blues and whites and kind of ice and snow, which I guess a lot of people had issues with. I didn't really notice it because the game's not, it's not like a game that you're going to spend 200 hours in. So it seemed to fit for me because it was just telling a self-contained story, but that's the major complaint I've heard against it.
Which if like if that's the only real if that's the biggest complaint that people have against the game, that's not really that bad.
Nope.
We'll see. I'll be curious to, like I said, they're if they're I'm wondering how much they're selling for, because they're not, $60 games. So I'm curious if they're selling well. Obviously, they're doing enough if they're doing a third game. But yeah, it'd be curious to see how this one does. Does it have a release date, or is it just the trailer announcement with a?
Let me see. I have it written down somewhere. August 22nd. Oh, no,
Okay,
not
so pretty
even though.
soon.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because August we also have Control, because that just went gold a little bit ago. But
Astral Chain 2 and Ghost of Tsushima?
does what?
I don't know. Do I have the wrong? No, I
Ghost of
think I have the wrong
Tsushima
date
hasn't
written.
gotten a release date.
Oh, I think I, because usually what I do on my little list of like my wish list games, if they say like fall 2019 or something like that, I just put a date in so that I know it's supposed to come
You
out. So
just
I don't think I've
randomly
updated.
choose one.
Yeah, I just arbitrarily choose a date like, oh, it's supposed to come out sometime around this time. And I usually don't update it
Oh,
because I don't keep up on it. So
we are
yeah,
releasing now.
I update mine all the time. Like once they give a date, I'm like instantly go in there. Otherwise, it's like fall or Q4. I put all those that way. I know it's just like, eh, this window.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, it's sometime around this baby. And then if it comes up to that date and it I'm like, oh, did that game actually come out? I'll go and look for
She's
it.
like Amazon, where they put just these placeholder dates.
I do. Yeah. I have a lot of games on my list coming out on December 31st.
Yeah.
There's like 12 games on that day.
You must be really excited for December 31st then.
I know, right?
We want crazy day. Happy New Year. But yeah, that's basically it for the way of news and releases. Again, there's a bunch of discounts going on, but they're gonna be over by Monday. A lot of course, since QuakeCon's going on, they're doing a big sale, but I already have all that stuff. I was kind of hoping that the like ESO base game was going to be on sale for pretty cheap, because I was usually when that's on sale, like they have all the expansions on sale right now, because obviously the I forget what it's called, but that Elsewhere, whatever, it's that's on sale, but they don't have the base game, which typically is up there whenever they do the expansions or the coin discounts. And I was gonna be like, man, if it was just a couple bucks, I could see just totally buying it just to have it. Not even maybe jump into it right away, but at least it would be there. But yep. So I guess we can just move on to what we've been playing. So you finished Final Fantasy XIV's main story, right?
Yes.
Okay. So before we
Oh
get into
shit.
that, because I really want to know how it ends. We'll save that for the end, so at least you don't spoil our stuff. But have you been playing anything, Isley?
No, but I have prepared my speech for Zaya on what
Okay.
Final Fantasy 14 is about.
All right. Well, we'll still save that. So I did see that you were playing. Was that Michael that was playing Assassin's Creed?
Yeah, he's playing the last Atlantis DLC.
Okay. Yeah, I hopped on and I was like, well, I better start the second episode of the Hidden Blade DLC, since I hadn't done that yet, because I kept doing all the side quests. And I went to the ship. Icon was on the ship, but it was a blue icon. I didn't know, so I didn't realize I started a side quest. And it was one with oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the guy's name with the H. I put it in chat. Let me. What was his name? I'm gonna have to scroll way up, but
Herodotus.
yeah, him. And so we get to the I get to the island and with his family. And of course, you know, we're talking at the dock. And I'm like, ah, just skip. I, you know, I read the subtitles real quick and I just skip the dialogue because I've already read it. Then we go to his house. His brother shows up and they start talking. And then it just cuts to his brother and his mouth is closed, but his head's kind of moving a little bit as if he were talking. And then it cuts back to me or the other guy, and he starts talking, and like, but his brother isn't moving his mouth. There's no dialogue. There's no subtitles. It just glitched. It's like nothing. So I'm only getting half the conversation, but I could tell, like, clearly he's mad about something because the other character's reacting like, why are you yelling? But it was really weird. It was like throwing me off. And then there are some other conversations you have. I had with another character where I thought, like, uh-oh, is it doing the same thing, but this time doing it for Cassandra? But it's more like I'd wait, and it was just like a delay in her actually saying something. Like, she was, like, pregnant pause, you know, and then she'd start talking. But, and also what kind of annoys me is that because I have, I didn't download the last DLC, which I need to do, but because I have basically five of them, well, I finished the first one, seven discount, but it has, like, they're all active in the quest log. And it doesn't prohibit you from doing one if you haven't done the first ones. So you can kind of just do them all at the same time. And I'm like, why can't I just gate myself behind, so I do these in order? And I can't tell by the names, especially for the Hidden Blade one. I'm like, I have no idea if this is the second DLC or this is the last DLC. Like, it doesn't say the conclusion of the arc. Like, it's just generic description. I'm like, this doesn't help me. But they do have a thing where it shows, like, this little quest tree branch in the description. And it kind of shows, like, oh, this quest is related to this one and this one kind of thing. It's kind of interesting. And I'm like, okay. So it kind of led me on to realize I have to go to this lookout point on one of these main lands to find Darius? And he's up top, and then it starts a quest. And I'm like, okay, this clearly must be the second chapter. But then we go to this village. And in the village, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you need to find out who... Oh, what's her name? It turns out it's the lady's daughter. She has a name. Basically, she's like a cultist. and it's like, you know, you need to find the visionary. And it's like, get clues on the visionary. And it's like, but that's part of the third storyline? And I'm like, I still want to stay on the second one. I don't want to go on the third DLC yet. I was like, so it's really obnoxious, and I wish I could turn them off and just be like, no, stop it. Don't show me all the quest markers for everything that happens to be fucking available. Like, at one point when I was taking the dude, doing the side quest, taking him to go see his family on the island, I noticed that there's this little island in the middle of the water with this statue on it. I'm like, I don't recognize this at all. I mean, obviously there should be stuff in the game I shouldn't necessarily recognize because the game's huge and it's been a while since I've explored the entire world, but like this one itty bitty little island, I'm like, this isn't a thing, right? And then I get closer to it, and then I open up my map, and sure enough, there's the Atlantis DLC quest starts there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay. So they just plopped in this island, that itty bitty little thing that I never noticed. And then I was like, it just stood out. I was like, what the hell is this? But I made sure to avoid that so I don't accidentally trigger the next bit of DLC. I was like, let me finish this first one. But it's just annoying that I wouldn't put it in order. Like, it looks like it does, but just get rid of all the quests. Just hide them. Turn them off. I don't want to see them. But it's that kind of bummer. But yeah, then I played some of that. But I haven't played, like, again, I haven't started Youngblood. Play a little bit more Bloodstained, and then just a bunch of Apex.
But have you beaten Bloodstained yet?
No. I can't tell how far I am. I don't look at the percentage complete, so I'm not sure. I also, because of the Civ 6 coming out on Switch, I ended up buying the DLC on my computer for all the expansions, which completely changed the game. And so I'm like, all right, because I just bought two DLCs of changes in one go. So now it's like, instead of getting the incremental steps of, oh, here's all the major changes and new civs, get used to it, and then months later, here's the next bit of changes and new civs, now it's like, bam, it's just a giant bucket. Like, I bought a Game of the Year edition, I'm like, oh my God, now I have to deal with all this change, which is great because I'm having a ton of fun with it. And then I saw that they announced the release of Rise and Fall, which was the first DLC on iOS. And in the tweet replying to someone else, they did say they plan to bring the two DLCs to the Switch later this year. Which is interesting too, because I was looking at something, there's no multiplayer on the Switch. There's local multiplayer where you can kind of like, you know, pass the controller over to whoever's going to be the next Civ or whatever, do their stuff. Mm-hmm. Which I means, I guess, if you're not playing cooperatively, then you kind of know exactly what the other person's going to do. Unless you keep the Joy-Cons docked and you just kind of hand over the Switch to them so you can't see what choices they're making.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're surprising war on you. But they were talking about how, you know, people were going like, oh, why isn't that? Guys, going back to the original announcement for the Switch. They're like, oh, then why is there no multiplayer? Why is there no multiplayer? Like, everybody's complaining. And they had said, like, well, it's because the lack of certain functionality within the Nintendo Online requires a lot of work on the back end for us to do in order to get it to function properly online. And the same applied to iOS. You can't, there's no multiplayer on the iOS side because of their Apple's back end multiplayer functionality. But mm-hmm. It's kind of a shame. They do have stuff like, because they have the cloud saves, I'm surprised they have cloud turn-based. Like back in the day, they used to have this like basically play by mail, how people used to play, you know, chess, I guess, you know, back in the day, to where I make my turn, I end my turn, and then it pings you and sends you a notification like, hey, yo, it's your turn in Civ. And then you log in, you make your turn, do whatever. You know, kind of slow, but you can play that way. And they do that with the cloud now. You can do some, play a cloud game that way. But I'm surprised they haven't brought that functionality over to the Switch. But I'm looking forward to releasing the DLC there because then I can go back to cloud saving. Because right now I just isolated myself to the computer, which is fine because I'm primarily playing Mario Maker 2 on the Switch anyways. But yeah, the Civ's a great game, and definitely a game that could easily come over to, like I said last week, easily come over to PS4. It kind of bugs me that it's not there, but whatever. Great game, though. But yeah, let's go ahead and jump into, so we're going to get into, just like last week, did we record last week? Yeah, we did. Where I spoiled a lot of story stuff for FF14 Shadowbringers based on what my cousin told me. Just the main arcs, the main beats. We're going to have Isley recap that for Zaya to the best of his ability. Zaya can then correct, and then I get to find out what actually happens at the end of the DLC because my cousin at the time didn't beat it. So spoilers for FF14. Now, the one thing I didn't bring up to Isley was, again, because the cliched nature of it, out of context, is like, I guess get this because I'm like, oh, yeah, it all makes sense, is the dude who's been watching us for like the long time and realizes that we're not worth it because we just keep going to war. That traditional trope of let's observe you and humans are, or not humans, but every race is like garbage and you keep fighting each other, blah, blah, blah. And they've lived amongst us. He's lived amongst us for like hundreds of years and just we're trash. And now he just thinks we shall go. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I didn't talk about that guy cause he wasn't really important. I just gave Isley the major arcs. So go ahead, Isley, and recap the story of Shadowbringers for...
Okay, so I barely remember anything you told me. So this would be great.
Okay, well, if your recap is too short, I'll do my recap.
A long, long time ago, there was a shortage of supplies. So some evil dudes tried to do a Thanos snap, and they all wore cloaks and shit. Good Lord. I already can sense...
stuff is even me versus what I told you, I'm like, my God.
There were a bunch of cloak dudes, black cloaks, I remember that part. They wanted to do a Thanos snap to fix resources, but instead of doing that, for some reason there was an evil god and they were like, yo, we don't like you. And they all got together and did drugs and invented a different god, and that other god is who we follow now. Are you in?
Is that all you got?
I got more. Hold on.
Okay, keep going.
So there was this other good god, and I don't remember the parts in between at all, because all I really remember is the Thanos snap. But you thought that you were following a good god, but really you were just following a primordial being thing, and that's pretty much all I got. Basically, it's Marvel. Final Fantasy XIV is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but they changed all the major players into Final Fantasy characters.
Okay, so that is all of them. It's like, that's like super truncated, even more so than my truncated version of what my cousin gave me, since I cut out some of the side details. So I'm going to go ahead and give my recap book, because I want to see how close originally my cousin was versus this telephone game of the Thanos snap.
Oh, shit.
So basically it was that what he said is the Asgians were obviously the precursors. Something was going wrong in the planet, like it was dying. So they're all like have magical powers or whatever. They're all very attuned to magic. So they sacrifice, they come up with a plan to kill 50% of themselves, to sacrifice their life force to create Zodiark, to bring life back to the planet. And then he does, life comes back, new races, new species, and the plan is to them, once that flourishes back up enough, they're going to sacrifice all that life, minus the plants and whatnot, but the other life, to bring back that 50% that sacrificed themselves to begin with. But then there was a splinter group that didn't like this idea, and they created Hydaelyn to destroy Zodiark, and she punched him a bunch of times and created 13 parallel worlds. And the game FF14 exists on the 8th or 9th instance of this world. And basically, the Zodiarks that are still committed to the plan's idea is that they need to cause a catastrophe to destroy the world in each of these instances to bring that shard of Zodiark back to the Prime, to rebuild him and to get everything back, to still continue with the plan. And so they've been doing this, you know, on all these other instances, and now that's why the Asgians are trying to do that. That's why they're always trying to cause these problems with us, is because they're trying to destroy the world, yada yada, bring back this stuff. And what was the other thing he said? Oh yeah, and then there's that guy who turns out he's an Asgian, but he's lived among us like for 900 years or whatever, I don't know. And then there's the one world where it's just absorbed by light, because light without the balance of light versus dark, light runs amok, and there's the Sin Eaters, they're Heath Ledger, and they, you know, take the sin out of everybody, and they just got these angel beings that just destroy everything because light's just gone crazy. But then that's kind of where he ended it, and I'm like, and you go to the Asgian city, I think he said it was underwater, or you go to the world, I don't remember which one it was, the Prime, you go to the Prime world. But then he just stopped there, and then I don't know what happens at the very end.
Okay. Jay seems closer, but...
Is he, though?
Yeah.
Okay, you
mine was more truncated, so there was less room for error.
But
the
it was...
The more you talk...
A lot but of it error. Was wrong. There was no intentional Thanos snap.
Okay, you...
Well, that's
you,
what the 50% sacrifice was. He used comparisons with pop culture so that I would remember it.
I was trying to... layman term it for you, like, okay, it's kind of like this, to help
so
him understand.
There was no like resource issue. There okay. wasn't that they were killing the planet. This is like, it used to be the single world, it was all together, and it was like the perfect society, and then I don't know if they really like explained what happened, but it just started to like crumble from the inside,
right?
So
like something bad started happening. That's what
yeah, there was like natural disasters around the world, right, that were creating voids or whatever. And so they banded together, and they were called the 14, and it was like the leaders of the civilization or whatever that had the strongest creation magic. Mm-hmm. They summoned Zodiark to fix it, and everything was fine, but their plan was to continue to sacrifice things that Zodiark had created so that they can bring back the original 14, because they're half of the 14 had perished.
Okay, so it's just 14 people, not millions of Asgians.
No.
Okay. So, my cousin. Okay, so that's way less.
Yeah. they only became the Ashians after the planet got sundered. So there were, it was like a whole society, and there were the 14 that were like the leaders of the society, and their plan was to summon Zodiark to stop the planet dying, mm-hmm. and everything like that, and then to continue as the planet was rebuilding itself, sacrifice things to Zodiark so that they could bring back the people that had used their creation magic to the limit in order to summon Zodiark and save the planet.
So does Zodiark create the Humes and the Lalafell? Basically, is that how those races got created? Because they wouldn't have existed. It was just the precursor race.
Yeah, sort of. It's just kind of like they just kind of assume like evolution, basically. Like the planet's just on kind of like an evolutionary fast track because of Zodiark's power.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some people that didn't like this idea. They said it should be the world that's created now should be for the people that are living now. You shouldn't sacrifice, you know, the current planet to bring back people that have already died to have this future. It should be for the people of the future, not for the people of the past. Okay. And so those are the people that came together and summoned Hydaelyn.
Mm-hmm.
And Hydaelyn and Zodiark fought, and it was like a really long battle that ended up like ravaging the planet even more than just having Zodiark and the original natural disaster. And eventually Hydaelyn beat Zodiark, and when she struck the killing blow, it split the planet into 14 different 13 or 14 different reflections.
Mm-hmm.
And the source, which is the planet that the story takes place on, that the characters are from and everything like that, is the original planet. And then there's all these other reflections of that planet that kind of have their own like story, and like they're just like parallel universes, basically. They're just reflections of the source.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're from. We're from the source. And so the remaining of the 14, they become the Ashians. They're the only ones that had survived and continued to survive throughout the years. Their plan was to do the great rejoining and get all of the reflections to rejoin back to the source and rebuild the society that they had to begin with. Because now that all of these reflections exist, everything's out of balance, and it's just like not the paradise that it used to be.
So now, are the reflections duplicates of every version of everyone else, or is it all new instances of creation and life?
It's basically the only thing that's a reflection is the planet itself.
Right,
and then so each reflection has its own like
ecosystem and population.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's their own like reality or whatever, but the only parallel that can be drawn is like the actual makeup of the world, because if you look at the map for Shadowbringers and overlay it on the original Eorzean world map, it's the same. It's the same map, all the same geography and everything. But obviously the world's different, and society was different and everything like that.
And how many years ago did this happen within the game?
I don't think they specified, like basically like millennia, a very 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 long time.
So now
because
when these
go ahead,
when these reflections happened, did life start anew like from the primordial ooze, or was it like instantaneously whatever life was there, it created like their own life that was still in that same level of evolution or whatever? Like in the source, obviously were there people still alive on the source during the battle between Hydaelyn, or you said the 14 or whoever's left were the only ones that survived?
Yeah, so it was basically like a big calamity on each planet. So the planet was like destroyed, and there were some survivors, and it built up back from that.
Okay, so life just in each reflection, life started over in its own path, its own instance. Okay.
Yeah, so it's basically like each reflection is an evolutionary branch. So what could have happened in one happened in another.
Okay.
And so then their great plan, what they've been doing, is they want to rejoin all of the reflections to the source. But in order to do that, they have to balance the ether. So the source I don't know, it's like really confusing. So what they do on every planet is they make one specific element of ether, like the primary one, and then when the calamity happens, that reflection is absorbed back into the source, and then on the source a calamity of that element happens. So like the sixth umbral calamity or something like that was a big flood that wiped out Mach. That was a reflection that had too much water aspected ether that was rejoined to the source.
Mm-hmm. So what ether is abundant on the FF14 reflection?
The one on that we're the source on. One?
Heavensward, we're playing on the source planet.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. He made it sound like we were on the eighth reflection.
No, the eighth reflection has been absorbed into the source because we're on the eighth calamity.
So when they took the water planet and destroyed it, and then it gets absorbed back to the source, then we're like, what's up with Leviathan? Why are they showing up? Is that what's happening? Or is there, what was the calamity that happened on to us within the FF14 timeline when each of these calamities happened?
So each calamity has its own. The only one I know for sure of, because I read a lot about it, was the thing that happened with Omdapur and Mach, like the white mages and the black mages during that time. Because that's the whole storyline for the Void Arc raid series. The whole reason that the Void Arc exists, because there was a giant flood that was wiping out the planet. And it destroyed Mach, and it destroyed Yafim. And that was basically the Asians on one of the other reflections had over-aspected the water element to balance it on the source. So when that planet was destroyed, its ether went into the source, and that caused a flood on the source, which was this, I'm pretty sure it was like the sixth umbral calamity. So each calamity has an aspected like theme to it, basically, and that's what happens to the reflection when it over aspects its ether and is absorbed into the source.
But the source doesn't necessarily experience anything crazy. Like if we were just normal citizens in I almost said Ottergon, in Gridania, and we're just walking around, and then one of these sources gets destroyed, or not the sources, one of the reflections get destroyed and absorbs back into the source. Do we experience anything? Like, is there an aurora borealis? Do we see the effects of that?
Well, it's a calamity.
Right, so
basically what happened, the world gets destroyed, and it builds back up.
Oh, so
that's the whole thing of why the Asians are bad, because they're literally killing billions and billions of people every time they make this calamity, so they can rejoin all the reflections to the source.
All right, so I missed that aspect when I wasn't paying attention. Because I kept thinking, like, obviously, yeah, calamity on the reflection. I didn't realize that, okay, calamity on the reflection then causes a calamity in the source. So we are, so the Bahamut thing is basically the end of one of the, that happens like in the opening trailer for A Realm Reborn. Is that like considered one of the calamities or something, or
that
no? Because
was considered the seventh calamity, and it was, but it was orchestrated by one of the Asians. It was basically like, they're all like very long-term plans. So the Asians created the Allegans, and that whole thing happened where eventually they created Dalamud and Bahamut.
Okay, so now these aren't necessarily asteroid hitting the planet, world-ending events. These are just big disasters that do kill people, but don't necessarily destroy the world as a whole.
Yeah, so the world, the source isn't completely uninhabitable. It just has to rebuild. So, but on the reflections, those get destroyed because they're creating a calamity on that planet that doesn't get fixed.
Right.
So when the Asians are unimpeded and they just completely destroy a reflection and it gets absorbed, that's basically what would happen if a calamity, somebody wasn't there to like half stop or like impede the calamity, and it just gets completely destroyed and set up and absorbed into the source. That's why in Shadowbringers, you go to one of the reflections, you go to the first reflection. The only reason that still exists is because somebody interfered with the flood of light.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, do they have to coordinate these calamities between the source and the reflection to shepherd in that energy coming in? Like, you talked about how with Bahamut, that was obviously engineered. So I'm assuming they engineered that to kind of, Bahamut would be what, dark ether? I don't know.
I don't think they specified.
Because, like, if they go to the next reflection, let's say it's all fire. Like, it's the volcano planet. Mm-hmm. Titan's like, what's up? I don't know why he's there, the volcano. But it's Ifrit, whatever. And they destroy it. Like, do they channel that energy coming back into the source to cause a specific type of catastrophe or in a specific part of the planet? Or just, like, roll the dice? Like, hey, we destroyed the reflection. All that ether is going to go back to the source. Who the fuck knows what's going to happen?
Basically, what they do on the source is they kind of plant little seeds of, like, dissension and stuff like this, and just kind of let it run its course. But their ultimate goal is to, like, is to tip the ether in one direction so that when they destroy a reflection, it absorbs into the source and rebalances the ether. Because they're not trying to destroy the source, they're trying to make it what it was.
Okay, so
they're just trying to put all the pieces back.
Hey, let's bump up, like, in theory, let's bump up Leviathan, make Leviathan a little stronger, and then the counter element, they'll destroy that reflection, and that'll balance out the source.
More or less, yeah.
I just want to, like, see a timeline of, like, what tragedies happen, because obviously the Bahamut one, like, sure, that destroyed this big battlefield, but it wasn't, like, everything was messed up in the Realm Reborn. It's like, oh, yeah, you see the battlefield and the claw marks and all that stuff, but it wasn't, like, oh, my God, a nuclear winter happened, and we're Snowpiercer now, you know?
Well, it had, like, a major effect on the whole planet, but again, that was a calamity that was more or less averted, mm-hmm. not, like, a void creating, because they talk about, at least, there's one NPC, I can't remember his name, he does the Warring Triad. He talks about his world that he comes from, it's completely gone. It was completely absorbed by the void, and nothing exists of it anymore. Which makes a whole lot more sense now that Shadowbringers is out. If you go back and talk to the NPC, he has, like, little trickling dialogue that kind of, like, alludes more to the kind of overall story now that everybody kind of knows what's going on in a grander sense. But before, he was very vague about it. He was just like, the world that I come from doesn't exist anymore. It got destroyed. We're like, well, what do you mean? Well, now we know what it means. It was swallowed up by the void. It doesn't exist anymore. It's part of the source now.
So now, what do you do on the planet that had got absorbed by light? Like, what's the point of going there?
So the point is to basically stop the Asians, what they're doing, and let the reflections exist as reflections. So what they did was, there's actually a really cool side quest that kind of explains the events that led up to the light, like, war or whatever. But they basically created this dissension among these, like, races that were there, and it more or less led up to, like a Dark Lord, basically, or like a Shadow Lord. And then the Warriors of Light on that planet defeated it, but then they tipped the scales too far to the light, and this, like, huge this huge flood of light basically swallowed up most of the planet. Well, that's why they came to our world to kind of, like, try to fix it or, like, warn us about it and, like, you know, that kind of thing. Well, when they went back to their world with Minfilia, she stopped the flood of light and saved, like, a small part of the planet.
Hmm. So even though, so these reflections aren't necessarily imbalanced from the start, they're predisposed to be imbalanced if everything else isn't kept in check. But if we were just leave them alone without the interfere of the Asians, they would be like, okay, yeah, sure, it's, this one's predisposed to, you know, earth elemental. But right now, that only if there's enough dissension between the people there to cause an imbalance of the elements.
Basically the only reason that calamities happen and the ether gets unbalanced is because of the Asians, and because they're trying to rejoin the reflections to the source and recreate their, like, perfect society. Because their view is that because the source is fragmented into these different reflections, there's war, there's, like, disagreement, there's racism, socialism, well, not socialism, like, xenophobia and stuff like that.
Socialism.
I was just thinking of, like, social hierarchies and stuff like that. And there's all this bad shit, whereas, like, when it was all one planet, it was perfect because the aether was perfect. They, the Asians and like the ancients or whatever were these like perfect beings that could use their aether to create things, and it didn't kill them to do so, like, you know, summoning primals and stuff like that. But they could just create whatever, and it just used a little bit of their aether, and then they got it back because they were so in tune with the planet. But as far as like the source and the reflections go, they're just normal ass planets with normal ass people on them. Like, wars happen, disagreements happen, you know, stuff like that. But the Asians see that as imperfect, so they're trying to destroy all the reflections and renew the source.
Okay, so how many? They've destroyed six reflections so far?
Six or seven, yeah.
Okay, so now, that's what I was like, so we're going to have to go to these other, like, is that what all the expansion is going to be, is going to these other reflections and like, here, now we're on the 11th reflection.
And yeah, we don't know yet, because
yeah, it's like,
that's kind of where it's going. It's like, that's what it seems like, but at the same time, we've kind of dealt with one of the major problems, sort of. So nobody really, I'm sure there's speculation, but as far as right now, it's like, just wait, I guess we just have to wait and see what happens.
So now, is it like, they're treating like Hydaelyn bad? Like, is that, or is it more like, Hydaelyn's not necessarily bad, just more context to Hydaelyn now?
She's just a primal.
Right.
She and Zodiark and Ifrit and Leviathan, they're just elemental aspected primals. Zodiark and Hydaelyn just happen to be the light and dark aspected primals. So she's not necessarily bad. She's only as bad as the people who summoned her want her to be. She's just a reflection of those wishes. So now, she's basically, the people summoned Hydaelyn, they just wanted to make sure that Zodiark didn't continue to destroy. So that's Hydaelyn's thing, is like, don't destroy everything.
So we help her. Yeah. She recruits us to help her keep things in balance.
We're tempered by Hydaelyn, basically. Right.
So now, why do we give her all of the crystals? Like, what would happen if we gave all those crystals to Zodiark?
We don't know yet.
Now, is he like locked up like chains of Prometheus style somewhere?
I think so. The implication was that Hydaelyn killed Zodiark, and his death is what created the reflections. But every time you see Zodiark represented somewhere, he's like chained up or like imprisoned in crystal or something like that.
Each piece of him, he's like Osiris. He just got cut up.
Yeah, it's just, we're on his hand right now.
Yep. Interesting. Yeah, because I'm like, I don't know where you go from here. Like, I'm glad to hear that we're on the source. I mean, it in the end, that makes sense because it's super convenient. Just keep us on the source. Because I thought like, oh man, if we were on the eighth instance, and that's what the reflection, I'm like, that'd be crazy. But like, oh, we're on the source. Well, duh, trope. We're on the source, of course. But
yeah, that's why we have calamities and our planet has not been completely destroyed and into the void yet.
Man. But are there 13? There's not 13 elements, right? It's just duplicates of like, maybe there's two water ones, disposed ones, there's two earth disposed ones or something like that. Is that what it is?
Well, I don't. Each reflection isn't like a specific element. The Asians are just making problems with the elements. So if they see that, because they do it like shard by shard. So if they see that a shard or a reflection has an imbalance, they exploit that imbalance.
But and it, then that's what it has to at least be one. The one they need for the source, right? Like, oh, we're missing, the source is missing some, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters.
Okay, because so they just
been multiple calamities with similar elements.
Okay,
already.
It's just, we just need to destroy the reflection anyway. It's the reflection as a whole that needs to get absorbed back into the source.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
It's the reflection's collective ether getting absorbed back into the source.
Okay. Interesting. So then, is the, when you go to the Asking City, is that underwater?
Technically, yes.
Okay.
But is it's it like not, a, it's like a, it's like a ruin, but the main bad guy, Emmett Salk, he's like created an illusion of the city and like the people, and he's created a memory based on their like final moments. So when you go into the city, it's like recreated, and you talk to all the NPCs and stuff, and they're talking about the end of the world, basically.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's why I was kind of laughing, because you're talking about like the guy that's been with us for like hundreds of years or whatever, and he's done all of this like tampering, and he's been around and blah blah blah. You're talking about he like wasn't. Yeah, he's actually very super important.
Well, he just seemed like very much the way my cousin's crime was like, oh yeah, he says, you know, he had a family, you know, yada yada. He just observes us and realizes, you know, we're not really that worthy. Like the way that's why I thought like, okay, if we're on the eighth instance or reflection, that makes sense if he's trying to see if we should be destroyed. But if we're on the source, then it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, now it's like, oh, whatever. But
he's basically the reason that things happen on the source. He created the Empire. I'm pretty sure he's the one that created the Allegans too. He's been like the creating force on a lot of the bullshit on the source and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's like the leader of the Asians. And he's basically trying to see if we have the power of an ancient to be able to like join his side and help him. But in the end, we don't want to, basically. And he's like, oh, well, I'm disappointed in you because you weren't what I thought you were. And you're just going to turn into a terrible thing anyway.
Yeah, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Because the whole reason you're on the first, the light is like perpetual. And in order to bring back the nighttime and get rid of the perpetual light, you have to get rid of these things that are called light wardens. And they're like these really strong light powered beasts. And the only way to get rid of them is to, when you kill one, it's like light ether goes into the nearest thing, which is usually not strong enough to handle it. And just becomes a new light warden, and then just perpetuate their existence. But your job as now, like, you're called the Warrior of Darkness, because when you kill a light warden, you absorb its ether, but you don't become another light warden. So you just absorb the power, you take it with you on your way, and the night comes back. And that's why you're the Warrior of Darkness, because you're bringing the night back to the planet.
So then what do you do with the light that you absorb?
Shut up.
No, what do you do with it?
No, Michael was like, spoilers.
Oh. We're talking about spoilers here the whole time, Michael.
The whole purpose of what you're doing on the first is to kill all of the light wardens, bring the darkness back, and rebalance everything. But the more light you absorb, it's actually having an adverse effect on you, because you're not fucking perfect. You're just tempered by Heidelin, and you have like this special power. So when you get to like, there's four light wardens. When you get to like the third one, you start to have, it starts to have an adverse effect on your ether, and you start to be consumed by the light. And that's when Emmett Selk is like, maybe you're not the kind of thing that I thought you were. Maybe you can't do what I need you to do. And then you get to the fourth light warden and you kill it, and then it starts to like take you over, and it makes you like crazy, and you like, your character literally throws up light and like vomits light. And then Emmett Selk is like, okay, you're just going to turn into a light warden like everybody else, but you're going to be the strongest one, and you're basically going to make the light on the planet anyway, because you're just going to become another light warden, but you're going to be like the light warden, and nobody's going to be able to kill you, and it's a thing. But he's like disappointed in you, so he goes and hides in his little like fake city thing. And then he ends up being kind of right, because it kind of gets under control, but everywhere that you go, the light is back again. You're basically, you've become a light warden, essentially. But you're not like a big scary monster thing. You're just kind of exuding light everywhere you go.
So is that just how it ends? Like you get possessed by this light?
Oh, no. No, that's not the end, no.
Oh, so then what do you do with the light?
So there's the spirit of one of the Warriors of Light from the first is kind of like following you around. Because when they were the Warriors of Darkness in the Heavensward storyline. They're the ones that came to the first and were the Warriors of Darkness and were fighting you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, at the end of their storyline, they go back to the first with Minfilia. And what happens is Minfilia stops the flood of light, stops the planet from being destroyed. But the other members, like the Bard, the Black Mage, the White Mage, and the Paladin from their party or whatever, they give up their life energy or whatever to help Menphilia, but she tells Arbear, the warrior guy, that it's not his time yet. His role hasn't been fulfilled. So he's kind of like a light spirit that nobody can see or interact with except for you. He's kind of like following you around and trying to like understand and help you and stuff like that. And so he ends up being like your catalyst. He's like, you kind of absorb his essence or whatever. You become one like soul, and together you can use the light as like a weapon, and you dispel it to defeat Emmett Selk.
You're like Kamui in Piccolo.
Which is when I talked about the really cool fucking cutscene that was the coolest thing I've ever seen in the game. It was like that cutscene where Arbear is like, I'm going to fight with you. And you kind of like, he's like talking in the cutscene, this big dramatic speech. And then it zooms in on your character and your character's like mouthing the speech too. Like you're one person. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I love it.
Nice.
I have no idea what's going on right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, Izzy's probably like, he's like got the math symbols in front of his vision. He's like, he can't.
I mean, there's even still more to that, too. It's really like convoluted and in-depth and kind of like harkens back to a lot of the stuff that happens early in the game.
I'll be honest, I keep thinking of the Star Bomb simple plot of Metal Gear Explained.
They absolutely could do one.
And I keep hearing in Zaya's voice going, I haven't even gotten started.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, I was like, I just really want to know what they do next. Because obviously they have like the couple, they do like what? It's like four, it's like 1.1, 1.2, 3 and 4, and then it's the next expansion. Is that normally how it goes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, really curious what they're going to do next.
So the basically what everybody's speculating is now we're going to go back to the source and deal with the Empire, because now the Empire's like token puppet, Emmett Selk. He's not a problem anymore. But now there's an Asian left. What's his fucking name? The one in the right white robe. Elidibus. He's still like on the moon hanging out and plotting or something. I don't know what he's doing up there. But Emmett Selk, the guy, the one who created the Empire, he's not puppeteering the Empire anymore. But now Xenos is a problem again. I don't know what the fuck is up with him. He's like a demon thing now or something. He's like a problem. So we're, for the next like couple patches, we're probably going to be dealing with the Empire, because we just kind of left our world in like war and turmoil that's happening. So we have to go deal with that. But after that, I don't really know.
So have we been killing Asians ever since Heaven's Sword? Like,
yes.
Okay.
Well, pretty much.
So like every major expansion, like do we kill one or something?
Yeah. So in Heaven's Word, I think we actually technically killed two in Heaven's Word. Because in A Realm Reborn, we killed La Habrea. And then in Heaven's Word, we killed... There's like a dungeon where you fight two of them at the end. I don't remember their names. And we kill them. And then the boss is like... the Pope or whatever, he turns into a primal. But that was, I'm pretty sure that was Emmett Selk's doing, either Emmett Selk or Elidibus or something like that. And then in Stormblood, Xenos was the problem. So the Empire was being led by Emmett Selk, basically, or like his grand plan for the Empire. And they're the ones that are kind of like fucking with like ether and souls and extraction and all this bullshit. I don't know what the fuck is going on with the Empire, to be honest. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what's going on. It's really confusing. Some reason some of them are demons. They got a little red eye thing. They're like trying to make a fake echo, like your character has the echo. They're trying to make that artificially. I don't know what the shit's going on. I don't understand any of that, but
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. It gets really convoluted. I just want to go back to like trying to be friends with dragons. Let me go be friends with the dragons again.
There you go. Well, glad we get the recap and the whole story, because I know I'll never get to it again. And if I watch maybe some YouTube video on it, but now I got a nice recap. Now I'm just really interested in what happens next. But, all right. Well, I guess we're going to get there with that giant spoilery section for Shadowbringers.
Spoilers, the world sucks.
Yeah.
All of them suck.
Yep. All right. So thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Izzy. Thank you, Zaya.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And we'll see you all next time.
Later.
Bye.